Welcome to In the Moment. I'm Lori Walsh. George McGovern grew up in Mitchell, South Dakota during the Second World War. He was a B-24 Liberator pilot flying 35 missions over German-occupied Europe. He went on to serve the country in Washington, D.C. as a representative and senator. McGovern also made a run for president of the United States in 1972. John Schaff is political science professor from Northern State University in Aberdeen. He often lectures on George McGovern's life, and he joins us now from the Tom and Danielle Ahman Foundation studio at Northern State University. Dr. Schaff, welcome back.
Glad to be here once again.
Tell me a little bit about your interest in George McGovern, his life and his influence and his time in South Dakota and beyond. Where does that all come from for you?
Well, I think it started many years ago when I was actually kind of young, starting in my career. I had an opportunity to write a book chapter for an edited volume, which is still available from the South Dakota Historical Society Press, about the life of George McGovern. And I got tabbed, somewhat unfortunately, I suppose, to write about the 1972 presidential election, since that didn't turn out very well for Senator McGovern. And I think there, no, and I've been to a couple events with Senator McGovern before he died, down at Dakota Wesleyan, and in a book that a bunch of people in the state put together on South Dakota political culture, I wrote about U.S. Senate elections, including, sadly, again, when Senator McGovern got defeated in 1980. So my record in writing about him is writing about his defeats. But since then, I've just sort of in these opportunities to do a little bit of scholarship on Senator McGovern, I've gotten this interest in his life, and have kind of kept a toe in that pool a little bit throughout my time here in South Dakota, which is going on 18 years now.
Let's go back a little bit and talk about him as a much younger man. And how does he sort of come up in the world? What are some of the influences that are happening in South Dakota when he's young and kind of figuring out how he sees the world?
I think when he's very young, his youth in South Dakota, I think he can point to a couple things. One, look at when George McGovern grew up. He was born in 1922. In his formative years ended up being the Great Depression and Dust Bowl years. And I think that had a big effect on him in the sense that I think as a young man, agriculture is so important to our state, and he sort of imbibed this notion that agriculture is a very risky business, we still see today, is that agriculture, even more than most business, is subject to forces that are far outside the control of the entrepreneur, if you will. In this case, the least controllable thing of all, the weather. And I think it gave him a strong sense that there needs to be government involvement in agriculture to sort of at least set a floor or give some support to agriculture. I think that was important to him. I also think the fact that he grew up the son of a pastor, his father was a Methodist pastor in various places, but ultimately in Mitchell. And I think this sort of instilled in McGovern a kind of evangelism, not necessarily a religious evangelism, though I think there was some of that there. But I think he had the strong sense of public service, and that it's sort of your duty to make the world better. And I think he felt that very strongly, especially is that once he got to high school, he became a debater. And I think that was a big influence on him as well. Is I think he was known as a young man as being relatively quiet and shy boy, and he says that being in debate in high school, and ultimately he was a very successful college debater too, kind of brought him out of his shell. And it was really the first time he became interested in public affairs, because in debate, you have a resolution, it's some sort of a public affairs thing, a world affairs thing. And he'd have to research this, and he got interested in it, and he discovered he liked being in front of people talking about public affairs, and he found public affairs interesting. And so at least up through his high school years, I think those were the big influences on him.
What's his relationship with his father? Because as you mentioned, as a pastor, was that an easy sort of transition for McGovern to get up in front of people and start having those kinds of conversations because of sort of watching the work that his father did? Or was it something that he had to sort of overcome as an obstacle, his quietness go ahead.
I think it's the latter, actually. The second one is His father, the McGovern family was a little odd in that his father had been previously married, and then his first wife had died, and George McGovern's family was sort of a second family for his father. He was much older. He was an older man having a younger family, and you get a sense that there was a distance between father and children, kind of a more traditional, I don't want to say less affectionate, but maybe that's the right way to put it. And so I don't get a sense that he was, you might say, inspired by his father. And his father is not what we think of as a gregarious man. And I think it was, as I say, George McGovern had said that it was high school debate that it really changed his life.
And then another life-changing event comes his way, as so many in America at the time and around the world, because World War II, and he ends up being a B-25 pilot. Talk a little bit about his service and how that time influenced who he would become in the future.
To be precise, B-24.
B-24
Liberator. So I think that a couple things happened there. One, the B-24, relatively large bomber, large crew, and he was the pilot, so he was in charge. And so this, I think, it built up a lot of confidence in him that he could perform this role where the lives. I'm trying to think. It's eight or nine people are part of the crew of a B-24. And he was the head man as a relatively young, I'm trying to think of how old he would have been, about 23, I think, because he goes overseas in 1944, 45. So 22, 23 years old. And so that's a lot of responsibility. But I think the other thing, kind of during the war, and then I think immediately after the war, as George McGovern reflected on his experience in the war, is, as you see with so many people of that generation, especially that generation's political generation, is this interest in international affairs and kind of America's role in the world. And I think he had seen that what America does can have influence over so many people all around the world. And I think that a little bit that was already there, but I think it kind of lit a bit of a fire for him, that this is something that he was going to be interested in for the rest of his life.
Many of us spent the weekend sort of hearing and seeing tributes to former President George H. Bush and as he mm-hmm. died this weekend. And they have some similar sort of milestones in their lives, don't they? How did they sort of interact as contemporaries? Do you know?
Well, first of all, of course, the similarities are they both were pilots, although George Bush was in the Navy. Flying a smaller torpedo bomber in the Pacific, whereas George McGovern was in the Army Air Force, because the actual Air Force didn't exist yet. That came about after the Second World War when we got a new branch of the military. And he was flying a bigger plane. But they were roughly the same age. McGovern just a couple years older than George H.W. Bush. And I think what you see in common is the fact that both of them throughout their careers – that war experience, that experience of having, as a very young man, having to do extremely mature things. They grew up very quickly, but also that internationalist perspective. And part of that is the era in which they lived, because they lived during their political careers were during the Cold War. And so United States politics was very internationalist. But you can see George Bush especially George McGovern as a senator, very much focused on the Vietnam War, China, the Cold War. George H.W. Bush was a U.S. congressman. He never served in the Senate with McGovern. He failed in two Senate races out of Texas. But he ended up being ambassador to China, head of the CIA, ambassador to the United Nations. And you can see that the viewpoint of both of these guys was very global, very international. Like I say, part of that is simply the political time in which they lived, but I think part of that is that common World War II experience.
Let's talk a little bit about George McGovern's education then after the war, and how does he sort of find his footing in politics and public service post-World War II?
Yeah, so after the war, the first thing that McGovern was thinking about doing after the war was actually becoming a pastor like his father. And he went to Evanston, Illinois, where Northwestern University is, actually just to study for ministry. But then he ended up visiting some history classes and said, this is what I want to do. And so he ended up getting his doctorate in history from Northwestern University. And the time in which he lived in Northwestern appears to have been a hotbed of, I guess, what you could call progressive history. And not to get too much in the historical weeds, but McGovern was influenced by Charles Beard, who's an early 20th century American historian. He studied under a guy named Arthur Link, who is very much in this progressive mindset. And the idea of this kind of school of thought is very much motivated by looking at economic inequality, economics driving history, a sense also that what we call historicism, that as time goes on, you might say as a benefit of living later in time, we know more than people went before us. And so each generation, instead of studying the past to take lessons from it, it's more so we take what we know now and we look to the past and critique it. So, for example, progressive historians have tended to have, you might say, a relatively jaundiced view of the American founding, that why should we be governed by outmoded laws, outmoded theories of natural rights? And in the 20th century, as Charles Beard and then eventually George McGovern were living, in the 20th century, we know more, and simply the passage of time, especially the rise of industrialization, have rendered previous commitments moot. And so I think what you see there is McGovern got much stronger in his belief that in positive government, the power of government to shape an economy, to provide things for people, instead of looking at rights as a sort of negative concept that were to be protected from the government. And this requires, instead, government should be giving things to people. The government has to set up certain kind of base conditions or enabling conditions, material conditions, in order for people to actually be free and have a decent life. And it's a much more a view that's much more friendly to government activism and much more critical, you might say, American history up to that point. And I think this is really where you see McGovern's politics have been sort of squishy up to this point, kind of like a progressive or moderate republicanism, if anything, kind of like a Peter Norbeck for South Dakotans, kind of a Peter Norbeck Republican. And at that point, it was when he was in grad school, he decided, I'm a progressive, I'm a Democrat, and this is where my politics are.
So the Democratic Party is changing at the same time a little bit.
Yes.
Let's talk about his role in sort of embracing some of the ideas that he's embraced and weave that into how the party itself begins to change because of his candidacy and his voice in the party.
Well, I think what's interesting is, though, we talk about his college years. You know, in 1948, George McGovern actually didn't support Harry Truman, the Democratic nominee for president. He supported Henry Wallace, who was the Progressive Party candidate and kind of further to the left. And so the idea was that Truman wasn't to the left enough. But I think ultimately what you see is obviously within the Democratic Party throughout George McGovern's political career from, say, the mid-1950s until 1980 when he got defeated for re-election, is you see this shift from being a split, because this occurs in both parties, but specifically in the Democratic Party, between a Southern party that had had at least some conservative impulses, and a Northern party that was a little bit more progressive, a little bit more liberal, and over time, you see, especially that 1972 election is pivotal because you see a conflict between kind of old labor union, a more Southern-based Democratic Party. We used to talk about the Solid South, the Democrats could count on the South voting in every single election for their presidential candidates, for their Senate candidates, what have you. And McGovern is, I think, central to taking this much more progressive vision and ultimately making it the vision of the Democratic Party, not unlike in the Republican Party, where, you know, a lot of people look at the 1964 election and Barry Goldwater's defeat, you know, a massive defeat at the hands of Lyndon Johnson, but ultimately Goldwater could reshape the party in his more conservative vision. In a sense, McGovern did the same thing, that in defeat in 1972, one of the things that happened is that all these younger, more progressive, a little more radical parts of the party ended up sort of eventually easing aside kind of the old bulls from, you know, labor bosses from northern urban areas or southern senators who were kind of representing an older vision of the Democratic Party.
So if Barry Goldwater is sort of the precursor to the conservatism of Ronald Reagan, who comes after George McGovern in the party that embraces some of those ideals? Or does the party itself sort of try to stay away from McGovern after the loss and remain more centrist?
Of course, what happened is after McGovern lost is you get a more centrist candidate for the Democrats in 1976 in Jimmy Carter.
Sure.
I guess you could say that in some ways one of the victories for McGovern is 1992 because Bill and Hillary Clinton cut their teeth as college students volunteering for George McGovern in 1972, as did Gary Hart, who almost won the nomination in 1988 for the Democratic Party, was involved in that campaign. But I don't think, you see that in the congressional party before the presidential party, because more McGovern-type Democrats, especially in the 1974 election, it was such a big victory for the Democratic Party in the wake of the Watergate scandals. And you get a lot of young, more northern progressive candidates. And also you have a lot of rewriting of not to get too much, again, this is getting a little bit into institutional weeds, but those younger members end up rewriting a lot of the rules of Congress and pushing some of the older committee chairmen for the Democrats out, and younger, more progressive people come in. You probably, on a presidential level, you don't see a pure progressive Democrat as president until you get Barack Obama in 2008, I think, quite openly embracing that mantle of the more progressive visionary candidate, as opposed to, in this case, Hillary Clinton, seen as the more moderate candidate.
Right. Lessons for Democrats in 2020. Can they look back to George McGovern? Do you look ahead and sort of leave some of that behind? Are there cautionary moments, or are there, are Democrats today and progressives today still finding inspiration in how he embraced things? You know, some of the social issues especially come to mind, the African-American vote, for example.
I think they are. You know, it's always a conflict within any party, because any party is made up of a coalition. And the temptation to go too far in one direction is you run the possibility of breaking up that coalition. I remember way back, and I think it was in 2004, I was at an event at Dakota Wesley, and a young college student, and George McGovern was there, asked Mr. McGovern, why should I stay with the Democratic Party? Why shouldn't I go and be with the Green Party or something like that? And George McGovern said, no, I always think the thing to do is if you don't like where the Democratic Party is, you need to work to change it. And I think we're seeing some of that in the last election, in this midterm election of just like a month ago, is there are a handful of younger, more progressive Democrats who are sort of frustrated. You look at the House leadership coming in for the Democrats in January, and they're all 70 years old or older. And you got a sense, even though those people are going to, you know, Nancy Pelosi is going to be the next Speaker of the House, you got the sense that these younger people are frustrated, and that maybe they're looking at, we would like to see kind of a 1972, 1974 take two, that it's time for an older generation to move aside, and these younger, more progressive people are talking about things like Medicare for all or Medicaid for all and free college education. These sorts of things are getting a little feisty, and it's I guess we'll see over the next 2 to 4 years how much impact, especially, you know, in 2 years, which presidential candidate emerges from the Democrats. Is it someone who's more moderate, trying to hold a coalition together, or is it someone who says, no, we want to go hard in this direction, and whether that can be successful or not?